Welcome to Our Common Nature, an exaltation of our living earth, an exploration of our niche within it, and an examination of the lasting solutions we will create by shifting our culture through care, wisdom, and working in community with the earth toward accordance with its way. In this space, we highlight place, building bridges, and finding solutions in the common ground on which we all stand. It is with gratitude and humility that we acknowledge that we are speaking, learning, and broadcasting from the ancestral homelands of the Mohican people, who are the indigenous peoples of this land. Despite tremendous hardship on being forced from here, today their community resides in Wisconsin and is known as the Stockbridge Munsee community. We pay honor and respect to their ancestors past and present as we commit to building a more inclusive and equitable space for all.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Our Common Nature. I am Seamus, and today I'm joined by, of course, Scott, our producer, and Claire Cousins, running for District 106, New York State Assembly. Thank you so much for joining us. This is really exciting to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
You're running for the New York State Assembly 106th District. For the sake of a non-New York listener or general listener, what is the New York State Assembly?
Sure. So the New York State Assembly is the lower house of the New York State Legislature. Basically, it's our state house of representatives. It helps make the laws for all of New York. And the 106th district is a massive district, which is actually longer than the state of Connecticut, which includes the city of Hudson, town of Poughkeepsie, town of Hyde Park, and some rural areas across Columbia and northern Dutchess County.
Wow, thank you. So that's a pretty good stretch in the central Hudson Valley on the eastern side of the Hudson River. So if anyone is like looking at a map. And you personally, what is your relationship with the district? How does that inform your desire to run for assembly here?
Sure. I am a lifelong Columbia County resident. I have lived either in the city of Hudson or the town of Greenport my entire life, and I've never had a desire to live anywhere else, but I'm getting priced out. And so are many of my friends and family. So affordability is a huge issue of mine. Housing and climate are both in crisis, and working class people are left behind. So there needs to be more voices like mine, working class, women of color in the legislature. And that's a large part of what compelled me to run and why I feel so connected to this district, because I feel like there is a lack of that experience in the conversations at the legislature level right now.
Absolutely. Yeah, representation is really key in all legislation, but I see it definitely here more and more. You are running in a Democratic primary against incumbent Dee Dee Barrett. What inspired you to primary her?
So to put it plainly, three strikes, right? Working with her on the Clean Slate New York Act, which I can talk a little bit more about. It is a economic justice bill that provides second chances to folks who have been engaged with the incarceral system. They've served their time, they've served their post-release, and then they've spent another period of time where they have not recited, and then their record would be automatically sealed, and then they'd have access to things like public housing and, you know, federal student loans and certain jobs that are right now prohibited by, well, not right now because we passed Clean Slate, but previously were prohibitive because of their backgrounds. And I co-founded a housing organization that works at the intersections of housing and criminal justice reform. So we were really championing the Clean Slate New York bill, and it was really hard to move Dee Dee on that bill. So that was strike one, not getting the support we needed behind Clean Slate until it was a really watered-down version of the bill. And then she voted twice to end the eviction moratorium, which would have protected renters in the height of COVID from predatory landlords who were looking to, you know, revamp their apartments, get rid of people who were living in their apartments that didn't necessarily fit the dime of the type of tenant that they wanted. And obviously, as a tenant organizer, that was just not acceptable for us. And then a really dangerous introduction of some legislation that would change the way that the state measures methane emissions. And as the chair of the Energy Committee, which she is, which is a very powerful position, that was just a really irresponsible piece of legislation to bring forth. And it really would walk back some of the climate goals that the state has set. So that was the third strike. And, you know, I take this run as answering a call to action. It was not my first choice. I was asked in 2022 if I would run, and I didn't feel prepared. That ask came from Working Families Party. And then in 2024, they came back to me after the methane bill was introduced. And I decided, you know, people need representation, people need change, people are ready for change, and they're ready for their interests to actually be represented. So I decided to run.
And you were approached specifically. Why do you think people wanted you to run?
I often ask that question. But when I'm being, you know, reflective and not in my own personal insecurities around being a public figure, I know that it's because I have showed up for the community in many different capacities over the last 10 years. And I am in my second term as a county legislator. So I have experience with what legislating means. And I think that people feel real hope when they can relate to somebody who is in charge of creating policy that supports their quality of life.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, representation is so huge. You don't have many tons of people in this part of New York anyway, running, women, people of color, and younger people, which is
right.
You know, all areas that need to be better represented in government.
Mm-hmm.
That said, who do you feel is your base? Who currently has shown the most interest in your campaign?
Working people, working families, people of color, climate activists who are angry about the methane bill, housing activists who are angry about DD's opposition to good cause eviction for upstate, you know, folks who care about affordability, gun safety, abortion, progressives, young people, college students. I think it is a mass majority of folks who want to see the right thing done in government. And we're building that base every day by helping people feel secure in the fact that there is another option in this primary.
And with that, who do you feel you'd like to appeal to most? Meaning, like, who are you most challenged looking at least in the primary?
The goal is to appeal to working class people throughout the district, the grassroots folks who are showing up for this campaign and who have been left behind for far too long. I think it's important for people to know that, you know, I'm not afraid to have tough conversations and I can't be bought. I think that that is an important piece of this campaign. My opponent is taking money from fossil fuel companies. She's voted with Republicans against gun safety bills and to protect Trump's associates from prosecution. And, you know, with claims to be a progressive, it doesn't really match up because she's continually siding with corporate interests. I have vowed to never take corporate money, and I want to be accountable to a base of people that truly represent the district, because that's what elected officials should be doing with their time.
Absolutely. Yeah. So let's say you win the primary and face a Republican candidate in the general election. How do you feel about your prospects in that race?
So a lot of the worry that I hear in this primary is that we live in a purple district. And that may have been true 10 years ago, but this district has gotten much bluer over time. Biden won it by 15 points in 2020. And, you know, the primary is really what I'm focused on right now. But I think people know that there are enormous issues facing us because they're living with them. And I have a bold new vision for how to move New York forward and not take us backward. And I think we have to remember that running a Democratic primary, even in this political climate, is not divisive. It is probably the most beautiful part of our democratic process, is to give folks the option of who they want to see going toe-to-toe with Republicans to protect these things that we care so deeply about. I think it's almost more dangerous to support conservative incumbent who has proven that just because I have a few good votes on something, that makes room for me to have a bad vote or introduce a bad bill. I think that that's not integral, and that's not what people are looking for in leadership. So I think that folks want to see a strong candidate who's not afraid to stick to their values and stand up to what is right in the face of adversity and in the face of opposition, because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, it does seem that, you know, when people stick to the tribal party line, you lose sight of actual issues and actual platform and actual topics in exchange for being right with your clan in a way.
Right.
And people end up voting against their own interests. It's well known that Republicans do that, you know, overall, but it's happening more and more. I see, especially with the, I don't want to typify, but from what I've seen, it's mostly older Democratic voters who are really unwilling to look at real critique of their own party.
Yeah, I would agree. And I would also add that I think that there is also an acknowledgement and an appetite for the change. People are also trying to persuade some of those folks who are afraid of the change to understand this is the goals that we've set as a Democratic Party, is to support young leadership, is to support people of color, is to support working class people. And when we have the opportunities to do that, even when it's scary, we need to be doing that. Otherwise, like you said, we are going against our own interests. And I think that this race is really making that conversation a kitchen table issue in Democratic households. I think people are really starting to think about it because it's here. It's not just something that we're talking about anymore. There's action to put behind the words now.
Yeah. And ultimately, if you look especially at the career politicians who've been in office for a long time, if you look at the voting records, Republican, Democrat, a lot on the really big important stuff, it doesn't seem to be much difference. Like, they're all kind of voting for the wrong thing altogether.
Right. And there's also room on the other side, too, to have that same conversation, but in a positive way. There are also fed up young Republicans. There are people who are standing in the middle that are just waiting for a working class champion that they can resonate with also. There's not just extreme party politics happening. And I think that that's not getting enough attention when we're talking about the fear of November, is that there is a country divided, but there's a ton of people in the middle that are trying to figure out what is the right direction. And I think that that's one of the places where the Working Families Party is really integral in this campaign, because it's sowing the seeds of conversation that people need to really be having, is that there's a mass movement of working class people whose interests are not protected from either side. And we need to make sure that we find spaces where we can move people to the progressive side and get things done that benefit the overall state of New York, the overall district, the overwhelming majority of people that have a shared experience, instead of playing into the fearful party politics.
Yeah, absolutely. So what are you most interested and motivated to work on as soon as you get into office?
My top three priorities are affordability, housing, and climate. I think that, you know, housing and climate fall under the affordability umbrella. But, you know, I plan to back the New York HEAT Act, which would cap utility rates for working families and move us towards renewable energy, and really focus on the combination of climate and affordability issues. There's a lot of work that we can do here to make sure that we're taking urgent action to address the climate crisis and making the billionaires and corporations who got us into this mess pay for their pollution, not the everyday people. And I just like to highlight that this race in a lot of ways has been compared to Sarah Hanna Shrestha's race. She's in the 103rd. Mm-hmm. And she's been able to get into office and she's been able to get things done. She just introduced a bill called the Hudson Valley Power Authority Act. So it would be taking Central Hudson over and turning it into a public power authority. And I think those are the examples of the type of legislators that I want to work in partnership with, because that is something that for far too long it existed, but it didn't exist in a real way. And when you have activists and organizers going into the legislature and really caring about these issues, we're revamping things and making sure that public interest is taking precedent over profit. And I really commend the work that she's doing, because it's really inspiring to see what is possible and what type of colleagues I'll have when I get into Albany.
That's exciting. I mean, I personally enjoy when there is newer politicians, or at least new faces in politics, in newly elected to office, because then you know that things are going to get done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are not so comfortable or complacent in their position, and they're not just, in a way, it feels like you have more accountability to the people who voted for you.
Yeah. And also, like, one other thing that I've been thinking about is that one of the senators that I'd be in partnership with is Michelle Hinchey. And she's done a ton for rural communities. And that's exciting to be able to have an actual teammate in the body of government to get things done together, not just with this progressive block of assembly members, but on a statewide level, there's a good team that has shared values that will work together to make sure we get things across the line. So that's another piece of it that, you know, I'm really excited about.
So the 106th district is rich with history and ecological wealth and heritage. How does the wild nature of this place play into your work in the campaign?
So a couple things. First thing is, just on a intimate note, me and my kids often, when we have free time, we'll hop in the car and find a place to park and just walk as many walking trails as we can because it's such a beautiful district. But in the Hudson Valley, you know, we are on the front lines of the climate crisis. We're seeing unprecedented flooding, wildfire smoke clouds in the skies. It's impacting farmers. And I want to make sure that we're working with agriculture to make sure our area remains abundant and farmers have the tools they need to combat, you know, climate change. I think that that's really important. We have tons of small farms throughout the district that need support, and they need to know that their elected official takes the climate crisis seriously and is invested in listening to them and supporting the things that they're highlighting they need to not continue to produce things, but to be able to protect what exists here.
Yeah, and that leads me to my next question on ecological conservation. There's a lot of talk at the legislative and the industrial and the economic level around addressing climate change, specifically in fossil fuel emissions. And the funny thing about that is we've highlighted on this show a number of times how those fossil fuel emissions are only a sliver of the causation, wherein most of the real issue is about combustion vis-a-vis destruction, as well as the combustion of ignition of all the industry and of that stuff. But we've talked about before on the show that combustion and photosynthesis are opposites of each other, meaning they have to happen in a balance. And our society has pushed that balance way, way out of the way. And there's so many mitigating solutions in maintaining healthful photosynthetic ecology, meaning lots of plants and lots of those creatures that support wild plant life. I have noticed a lot from the 20th century to now, there's a mindset around conservation of keeping humans and the wild separate, which has only led further and further to a lack of understanding of wild places by our human culture. It seems like it's a folly to keep going in that direction. And what we need is actually more education, more integration, more direct contact with the wild places so that we better understand how to support the photosynthetic mitigation of our combustive activities that are causing climate change. That all said, what specifically is your stance on ecological conservation, and how would you balance those concerns with greater development in both commercial and residential urban programs that are happening here?
Sure. I think in my capacity as a legislator, I think we do need to be conserving land for nature. I would support adding more land to our state parks, and I'd support legislation to protect our farmland from being bought up and paved over. And once you put a mini mall on there, you can't go back. We do need to be building wind farms and solar panels, but those should be publicly owned through the New York Power Authority, also known as NYPA. And NYPA has the power to have public hearings and take public comments before it can start building. So, you know, that's one prong in my capacity as a legislator. But also, this is where it comes back to the base of people that I'm building, because there are folks that are doing hard work on what it means to be integral when it comes to ecological conservation. And I think leaning on the experts is also extremely important. I am not an expert on this issue, and I can't go into office pretending that I can even come up with a solution on my own. You know, I need to open the doors and invite these folks to the table to have real conversations about what this could look like, working in partnership to meet the goals that folks are setting.
Yeah. And there's a lot of opportunity. I guess I can say expert. I do work as a professional in that field. Cutting edge in the world, especially of regenerative agriculture, among other things, where we can still be putting out produce, still making food for enough people, but at the same time creating habitat and reducing our inputs along the lines of pesticides and synthetic fertilizers. And for a lot of reasons we spoke about on the show before, this region is ripe and ready for responsible, educated implementation of regenerative agriculture in applied methods. I think the big limit there at this point is there are producers who want to work this way, but getting those people connected to markets and distribution systems is a kind of a hang up still. Beyond that, I'm wondering, have you encountered anyone who's talking about regenerative agriculture? Is that something that's kind of made its way into your headspace and in building your platform?
I've done some research. I'm not very deep into it yet, but so far I'm a fan. I want to see farms that are locally owned practicing regenerative agriculture and, you know, paying their farm workers fairly. That's what we need to be encouraging rather than corporate farming. And that's sort of where I've landed so far.
Yeah. I mean, I can't speak across the board. There's always individuals are going to be individual, but I can say from the ethos of those people in general that I meet who are engaging in regenerative agriculture, sustainable labor practices and healthful, I would say, labor practices, even beyond sustainable, is also at the top of their minds. And I know a lot of people build careers, not just employ someone. So I think that there's a lot of opportunity there. And I'm looking forward to seeing it more on the radar. The only other politician I hear about talking about regenerative agriculture, honestly, is Robert F. Kennedy Jr. So It's interesting to hear who's actually getting into it. So coming back to the climate crisis, I mean, I know that's a major focus for you. Would you mind going in a little bit more into what you want to actually do in regards to the climate crisis or what you can do?
We need a Green New Deal for the Hudson Valley, first and foremost. And that's why I'm fighting to reduce utility bills. The New York Heat Act, it would help working class families afford their power by capping utility bills at 6% of their income, saving them up to $75 a month. We want to hold polluters accountable. The Climate Change Superfund Act requires polluters to pay for their contributions to the climate crisis, and it would fund critical infrastructure projects in the process. And these two bills are bills that exist that, you know, it is the prime example of it's not enough to just sponsor the bill. You need somebody that's going to be in office, that's going to work with their colleagues and organize more colleagues to join in on this fight, that's going to talk to the press, that's going to educate the public about how important these bills are to really build the momentum. And that's what's lacking around these two pieces of legislation in particular. You know, I want to ban new fossil fuel infrastructure. Right now, we can't afford any more pollutants in our air and water, which means we can't let projects like the fracked gas Iroquois pipeline expansion move forward. We need to build more renewable energy. Like I said before, we're only at 4% wind and solar energy, and that number needs to go up, not down. It's critical that we're building 100% renewable energy projects. And two more points are bring utilities under public control, like Sarah Hanna is introducing into the assembly. I think that that is critical to us meeting our goals and creating new green union jobs to build publicly owned renewable energy. It's time to fully implement the recently passed Build Public Renewables Act to create tens of thousands of green union jobs across the state and working hand in hand with labor to make sure that people are a part of the conversation from the beginning. Because I think some of what is scary about combating the climate crisis is that for a long time, it's seemed utopian to talk about the effects of the climate crisis. It's right in our face. And we have to make changes, and changes can be uncomfortable, but we have to make sure that folks understand what's actually at stake and that there is space for everybody to make this transition together.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, and we're going to need to get into a visioning episode on the show at some point soon. But for people who really have a good context of the full issue and also of what the solutions could be, I think that there isn't enough people really talking about what the beauty of addressing the issue might end up looking like.
Like, I agree.
Yeah. Imagine you don't have to be scalding from the hot summer sun, you know, also getting you from the concrete underneath. If you actually had shade trees to walk under when you're in any city street, that might even feed you or create habitat around your world. So,
and even more severely, just, you know, my kids, all three of my kids have asthma. And when, you know, we had the wildfire smoke coming down from Canada, it was like, Code red, stay inside. Like, we cannot control. I mean, my youngest had COVID a couple of times, but after having COVID, her body was just not able to recuperate itself. And some of that is literally because the air quality does not allow her to breathe in the fresh air that she needs. And her lungs have just not been able to, you know, recuperate themselves. And being outside is actually really toxic for her. You know, the summer is going to be really rough, especially on the humid and muggy days when, you know, pollen is out of control. And, you know, there's just so much smog floating around. It's really hard for people who are specifically Black and brown families. Asthma, allergies, and eczema are the trifecta that is talked about in Black and brown communities. And a lot of that reason is because we are exposed to exorbitant rates of pollution in the types of housing that we're allowed to live in because of cost prohibitive reasons. So, you know, there's lots of different levels that people can relate to how the climate crisis directly affects them. And I think that it's time for legislators to really be educating people about the effects and have people understand that, like, the more that we are acknowledging that this exists and that the reason that this exists is because we have greedy folks in power that are more concerned about profits over people, mm-hmm. then the farther away from solutions we'll actually be. But we really, you know, it really does need to be an education campaign for some time.
Yeah. We also definitely need legislators in office who actually give a damn and are actually have the energy and the motivation and the real firsthand understanding of the situation and the timeline that we're on, because it's, mm-hmm. you know, people who are already, you know, steps away from their retirement, they've never cared about this because they've always assumed that it's going to be something they won't have to deal with. Mm. Now, real adults are younger than them are having to face the issue of, you know, protecting their families against these problems that are right here at hand now. So it's exciting to have people like yourself who have the motivation to, you know, actually be in office and do the real work. Mm. That said, there's been a dramatic shift demographically in the district since the pandemic. There are many left-leaning and yet wealthy urbanites that have made home or a second or third homes here since 2020. How does the shift, that shift specifically, play into your campaign, and how it affect your votes while in office?
So while I think that, you know, it's definitely been happening, I don't think that that tells the full story. Some people have moved up to the Hudson Valley because they've been legitimately priced out of New York City. So there is sympathy there for what we are currently going through in Columbia County. And while I hope to earn the vote of as many Assembly District 106 residents as possible, I want to make it clear that this is a campaign that is powered primarily by small dollar donations. And I will legislate on behalf of working class people. I think that there's still enough, even if it's not enough of the working class folks, there's enough sympathy for the issues. We have the conversation about gentrification, and people don't want to be considered gentrifiers, but understand that that is the reality. And most folks that move here want to pour into this community so that they can get the most out of this community. And that means acknowledging what they're moving into and also trying to help protect what has existed that made this community an enticing community to be a part of. So I do think that there are responsible, wealthier folks that have moved in here, and having a leader that will also mobilize around the fact that the district has changed and energize people to give them spaces and opportunities to be accountable in that way, I think is also refreshing to folks.
Yeah, definitely. And that begs me to ask you the question, because on this show, our focus is about building bridges across these kinds of differences. Mm-hmm. So it does seem like there's a lot of division, or at least distinction, let's say, mm-hmm. Between minority working poor in this district, and then there's white working poor in this district, who, mm-hmm. These are assumptions of mine, but it does seem like there's a definite party divide as far as which way they vote. And then there's also the left-leaning, you know, wealthy long-timers and some newcomers who seem to be very different in a lot of their perspectives. There's a lot going on here. And in some ways, I've even described this district, specifically Columbia County, being a little microcosm of the entire country as far mm-hmm. as the way the whole country thinks. I'm just wondering, you've been on the campaign now, you vote, the primary is in June. Are you seeing people kind of crossing the lines and building bridges? How does community get built in this sort of place?
I think this is another reason that I've been sort of asked to step up as the right candidate, mm-hmm. because as you said, like, this county and this district is a microcosm of the entire country. And I am quite literally the product of many of those working pieces. I have, you know, I come from a Black father who mm-hmm. is a taxi driver and didn't graduate high school, but has done his best to provide a living for my family. And my mother, who is a white woman who also comes from poor, middle class, working class people, mm-hmm. Some conservative, some more progressive. She's a speech pathologist, so she has the education, and that the two of them working together have created me and also given me an eye into middle class families that come from poor and middle income families. And then myself being a progressive and raising kids in this very scary and tumultuous political climate, I have my fingers in all of the conversations and my ear is literally to the ground because it is what I'm surrounded by on a regular basis. And I think that people have found comfort in the fact that this is not a manufactured campaign. They didn't have to build up a candidate. And my personal experience is what's driving this campaign. I think the skills of a legislator is what I get the most pushback around, that Dee Dee has the experience. And that's amazing. That's true. But she learned that experience. She wasn't always a legislator. She came into office and she gained the skills to do that part of the job. The other piece, the lived experience piece, the bringing the voices to the table piece, the organizing piece, is not something that you learn. That's something that you have. And that's something that I'm bringing with me on top of being able to acquire these skills. And I think that that is what creates community. It's an example of coming from these experiences and being able to make real sustainable change that feels accessible to everybody. And, you know, I will be a Democratic Assembly member, but I have Republican constituents that should feel comfortable with bringing their concerns to me and having, at the very minimum, conversations that produce solutions. And I think that people have really found solace in the fact that that is not just a talk game. That is genuinely how I operate on a regular basis.
Wonderful. It's very exciting to see a candidate with your real understanding really doing the work and going for it.
Thank you.
Yeah, that said, I guess my last question, what gives you hope while you're out there for the future, while you're out there on the campaign? And what gives you hope specifically in the face of this primary election?
So I think the overall hope that I feel is that there's so many people who are disillusioned from the process, but I see it working. This primary has moved Dee Dee to support things that we have been trying for years to get her to pay attention to. And that is the power of a primary. I think, you know, the Democratic Party starting to question how long is too long for a legislator to serve. That is the power of a primary. I think other young people and people of color engaging in these political conversations with me that have for a long time felt that there's no space to even share their opinion is the power of a primary. And whether we win or lose, obviously we hope to win, and I think we have a good shot, but win or lose, we understand that there's space for us in this political process. And I think we've ignited people again. We've helped people feel like this process is for all of us. So that's my overarching hope. And then throughout this campaign, you know, I've really been able to step into what it means to be me and what that means for the people watching this campaign to feel comfortable that their experience is enough for what they want to make happen. And I think that it's really been inspiring for people who both have known me for a long time to see me actually putting action behind words. And then for people who don't know me to get this sort of refreshing taste of somebody who is ready to do real work and really like push what it means to be an elected official. To the 10th degree and engaging people's concerns into the political process. So I have a lot of hope in this process. I think, you know, we're in a nexus moment throughout the entire country. The Working Families Party is most definitely gaining momentum as a movement. And I think that's the other big part of this campaign is that I am a part of a block of Working Families Party candidates that have an aligned vision. So, you know, me winning in the 106 is not just me. If these other candidates also win their primaries, that is 6 to 8 progressive legislators joining the assembly to work on the same bills. That will push us over the line. That will make working class experience exist in the assembly, not just be a voice. It will exist in the assembly. And that's really exciting for me.
Yeah, it's exciting for all of us. I think everyone, at least younger voters in general, we're hungry for an alternative. So especially more progressive wings out there that are gaining traction, it's exciting to see that happen. And it's exciting to see the ground that you're gaining and in the elections you're winning and the votes you're securing. So
absolutely.
Thank you so much for coming on. I don't have any other questions unless you have something you want to get into.
I appreciate the opportunity to be on your show. I think, you know, it's important to have these conversations. And, you know, one of the other things that makes us a community is sharing our platforms. And I think there's also power in, you know, exemplifying that when there is something new happening or something exciting happening, that we bring people together through whatever outlets we have. So I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, happy to. How can people get in touch with you? How can people reach out if they're looking to, and anything else you want to plug while you're here?
Our website is probably the most all-encompassing platform. It's ClaireCousinForAssembly.com. Right now in the campaign, donations are probably one of the strongest ways to support the campaign. But also, if you go on the website, you can find opportunities to volunteer. We have phone banking and Canvas shifts. We only have a month left. So if people want to really help us hit the ground and identify as many voters as possible, we'd really appreciate it.
Fantastic. Yeah, we'll get this out as soon as we can, and that should be on the air and well before the primary. So
amazing. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you. And thank you all for listening. Hope you all take care.
If you'd like to reach out with any comments or questions, feel free to email us at ourcommonnaturepodcast@gmail.com or follow us on Instagram at our.common.nature.